Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us. It's great to see so many of you online this morning. Today's session, as you're probably aware, is the furlough update scheme. And we are very fortunate to have teamed up with the fabulous Lisa Kennery, Director at Pearce Business Advisory and Accountancy Group. And she's joining us to talk to us today from a payroll perspective and to give us a real sort of hands-on practical approach to dealing with the processing of the coronavirus job retention scheme or the furlough scheme as we now know it. For those of you that don't know and haven't met me, I'm Sarah Collier, Partner and Head of Employment at KBL Solicitors, and my focus for this morning's session will be on the employment law, HR aspects of the furlough scheme, and of course that the focus is going to be on the flexible furlough scheme that will be brought in from the 1st of July. In terms of questions for today's session, there is a chat box which hopefully you will have either used before or you can see. Feel free to add any questions in there. If somebody has already asked a question that you would have liked to have asked yourself or you like, then you can actually like it. And towards the back end of today's session, subject to time, we'll look to deal with those questions. And the ones with the most amount of likes will obviously be our priority. Hopefully there won't be any issues from a technological perspective or on any of your fronts, but I have put in the chat box an email address for Jill Hart and Sarah Taylor. So if you have any issues or for any reason you get bumped out of the session, please do contact them and they will assist in getting you back in. However, I think from in a few moments time, we are going to start recording the session. So if for any reason you are struggling with technology, you will be able to access the session sort of going forward. If you have got your video on and you don't want to be recorded, please, if you could turn that off, that would be great. We have also muted everybody for this morning's session. So if for any reason you become unmuted, if you could please remute yourself just so that we don't have that background noise that can be quite distracting, as I found out in the first webinar that I carried out like this. So the sort of order of events for this morning's webinar is for us to be covering, as I said, in particular, an update from the furlough scheme and the flexible furlough scheme and the ultimate phasing out of this scheme until the end of October. Lisa is going to talk about aspects from a payroll perspective and also walk us through two live practical examples of how the calculations will work and also the important audit information that you will all need in terms of what you are required to retain and for how long in case there is a HMRC audit at some point. Lisa and I are then hoping to have a bit of a brief Q&A session with some questions that we are being asked about this from our clients. But of course, once that session has finished, in terms of our set questions, we will look to deal with any questions you've put on the chat. If questions are confidential from your perspective and you don't particularly want to put them in the chat, both Lisa and I are more than happy to accept any emails or calls after the session to clarify any of the points or to answer any of your questions. So without further ado, let's get started looking at the actual flexible furlough scheme. So what is it? What is flexible furlough? So on the 19th of June, the government have provided further guidance on how this flexible furlough scheme will operate from its introduction, as I said, on the 1st of July. But in a nutshell, employers from the 1st of July will either be able to bring back previously furloughed employees to work on a part-time and flexible basis, or to re-furlough people that have already been furloughed and apply this flexibility in terms of any amount of time or any shift pattern that these employees will be able to work, and you'll still be able to claim via the coronavirus job retention scheme for the grant for the hours that they do not work. So effectively, you can have this hybrid where people are working for any amount of time and any pattern that you require, and you as a business only pay them for that time that they're working. The time that they are still furloughed in any given week will be covered by the job retention scheme. So I just want to run through some key aspects really to this. We are going to provide a document on the back of this session via the feedback email, the follow-up email. So some of this information will be provided on there, and in particular some of the figures that I'm going to quote, but feel free to take notes as well. So in order for you to make use of the flexible furlough scheme, or indeed to furlough anyone on a full-time basis going forward, they must have already been furloughed for 3 consecutive weeks as a minimum between that period of the 1st of March and the 30th of June. So as you probably were aware from the updates from both ourselves and Pierce, and the last date that you could have furloughed an employee that had not previously been furloughed was the 10th of June, and that then gave them that 3-week consecutive furlough period before the end of June. So that's important. If you've got somebody who has not previously been furloughed, then you will not be able to furlough them going forward. However, there is an exception to that. So for anybody returning from statutory family leave, such as maternity, paternity, adoption leave, shared parental leave, or the parental bereavement leave that we saw introduced in April, all of those, if somebody returns to work from any of that leave after the 10th of June, they can be furloughed. So that is the sort of exception to the rule. So just to reiterate, employers will be able to bring back employees who have potentially been furloughed for the whole of period from March to date, or re-furlough employees who have previously been furloughed and adopt this flexible and part-time approach where any amount of time or any work pattern can be adopted. And as I said earlier, you will only be required to pay for the time that they actually work. And there will be no minimum furlough period that will exist after the 1st of July. So previously we saw that individuals had to be furloughed for minimum periods of 3 weeks at a time. That will go, and there'll be no minimum period of furlough for leave. So obviously that's welcomed from the flexibility perspective from businesses, but I suspect we'll hear from Lisa that this flexibility, whilst it's great, will obviously add a more complicating factor in terms of claiming and calculating under the scheme. Payments and grants will still be made via claims on the online portal. But again, this will need to be for a minimum period of 1 week. And there will be wage caps that are proportionate to the hours an employee is furloughed. So, for example, an employee is entitled to 60% of the 2.5 grand cap for furlough if they are placed on furlough for 60% of their usual hours. So it's exactly how you would imagine it works. As I'm sure you will have seen, there is going to be a curtailing of the coronavirus job retention scheme from July until it concludes on the 31st of October. So I just want to walk through now how it is going to be curtailed and what you will be obliged to contribute as these months go on. As I said, the document that we will supply after today's session will outline some of this information. So, for July, for those employees who are on full furlough, i.e. you're not taking part in the flexible furlough scheme at all and they're just remaining on a full-time basis furloughed, there will be no additional payments for you to make, and July will just be the same as the other months that you've been calculating. But for those that participate in the flexible furlough scheme, from the 1st of July, employers will only be obliged to cover the contractual salary costs for the employees for the hours that they work, together with the NIC and pension contributions for the time that they have worked. And obviously the remaining balance will be covered by the furlough scheme. From the 1st of August, we see that employers will then be required to bear the employer's national insurance contributions and the auto-enrolment pension contributions on furlough pay. So that's the first stage, really, of the curtailment, where, as I said, for August, employers are burdening, having to have the burden of the NIC and pension contributions. From the 1st of September, employers must, in addition, to them NIC and pension contributions pay 10% of the furlough pay, and the remaining 70% of their reference salary will of course be covered by the scheme. And in the final month for October, employers will again be obliged to pay the NIC and pension contributions and 20% of the furlough pay, and the scheme will fund the remaining 60% of that pay reference scheme. Some considerations really for employers and some of the queries that I've been dealing with for my clients this last week or so, as they're starting to turn their mind to July and how this might work for them, is what do we need to do in terms of our documentation? So many businesses will have already, should hopefully, have already sent out letters or sought a furlough agreement from their staff very much at the start of this process before they were furloughed, to record that employees were happy to be furloughed, they were happy to cease all work, and they were happy to accept an 80% a 20% reduction in pay capped at £2,500 pursuant to the furlough scheme. So do you need any further documentation going forward is the question I've been being asked. And the answer is yes. You are basically going back to stage one, where you're having to consult with individuals on an individual basis, and explain to them that obviously you're looking for them to return to work on a part-time, flexible basis, and obviously looking to agree with them the hours that you would like them to return to work upon. And this arrangement obviously will be changing from the 1st of July, and you can chop and change it almost, you know, on a regular basis throughout that. It may be that you start with them working 20% of their original hours, and you gradually move to them, you know, carrying out 100% of their hours. So it's therefore important for employers to have a new written agreement in place that outlines this flexible working arrangement with employees and how it will work. I think it's not clear whether employers have to first seek express agreement before they implement this flexible scheme on the 1st of July. But of course, my view would be that you absolutely should get your house in order prior to those changes taking place. Although I appreciate for larger workforces that may be more difficult. But the sooner you're able to get all of that agreed, the better. And as I say, recorded in an agreement ideally, or in a letter that the employees sign and return, that's obviously going to be the safest way of recording this agreement, but it is necessary. Just another point to mention really, and I think this would have come up when you originally put employees on furlough leave, but for some employers where there are going to be changes to their work patterns, which of course that is likely to happen with flexible furlough scheme, and your contract doesn't allow for that sort of change within their hours as you are going to be proposing, it may well trigger a collective consultation requirements. So if you are looking at 20 or more employees who are potentially not going to agree to this change and have their contracts, have their employment dismissed and re-engaged immediately on the new terms, then you may need to look at collective consultation. So I don't really want to go into that in any more detail other than to say you probably know already if that's relevant, because you would have encountered that probably at the very start of your furlough journey. But if you want advice on that or you're not sure, do let me know. And I think we are going to see this scheme becoming more complex because of the different hours that people can work and the way that you can effectively chop and change the arrangements to suit the needs of the business. And it's great, as I said before, from a flexibility perspective, but it's important that from both a payroll and a HR function perspective that you have all the requirements in place and you're geared up for that to ensure that, you know, those employees who are going to be on the part-time furlough scheme know what their hours are going to be and what they're agreeing to, etc. I also wanted to touch upon holidays and notice pay, because I have had quite a lot of questions regarding holiday, and a lot of my clients have been taking the opportunity to place their currently furloughed staff or require them to take some of their annual leave so that it's not stacking up and making things difficult when everybody's sort of returning to work, if indeed you've had that closure type situation. So the first thing to say is that, and I'm sure you're all now aware of this because we had clarity on it, is that holidays continue to accrue during furlough leave. But as I've said, you can require your staff to take leave during furlough under Regulation 15 of the Working Time Regulations. And effectively, all you have to do for that is to provide your employees with twice as much notice as the amount of leave that you're requesting them to take. So if you want them, for example, to take 5 days leave whilst on furlough, you'd be obliged to give them 10 days notice of that. So as I said, a lot of employers are using that opportunity and are certainly requiring employees to take a reasonable amount of holiday whilst they are on furlough, particularly if they've been furloughed from March until October, because it's a significant chunk of holiday entitlement that they've accrued in that period of time. And from my perspective, I think it's reasonable for you to be taking that that period of notice, that period of leave that they have accrued in that time frame. For those employers that don't wish to do that or have missed the boat and employees are now back, of course, you may have seen one of our updates that outlined to you that the government have extended the ability for employers to decide to carry over annual leave for the next 2 leave years following this leave year. So you will be able to allow employees, if they're unable to take holidays due to the coronavirus situation, to roll those holidays into the next 2 years to take them. But I think I'm certainly seeing that most businesses are requiring businesses to take them, and that's preferred. Just on holiday, you are required to pay their holiday at 100% of their pay. So if they take annual leave, you are required to top up from whatever stage we're at within the coronavirus curtailment to 100% of their pay. And another question, just briefly to mention before I hand over to Lisa, is that notice pay. So for people that are resigning or where you are serving notice on employees, again, that is required to be paid at 100% of their pay, but you can make the most of the current furlough scheme percentage. So at the moment we're at 80%, you just need to top up to 100% for the notice. But obviously, as I've said before, that will be curtailing down. So I'm now going to hand you over to Lisa so that she can talk to us about the actual claiming process and also walk us through some example calculations to hopefully, you know, shed some light on the difficulties we might be seeing with the flexible scheme. So I'll hand over now.
Thanks, Sarah. It sounds so simple. It all was. The word furlough would be used so commonly. We weren't aware of that terminology a few months ago, much. If anybody hadn't seen my last webinar session that I did that I covered off, please have a Google at Michael McIntyre's YouTube clip that he's put together. It's set in June 2019, and he's with a fortune teller, and it begins to start the story of furlough, what's furlough, and that he isn't a comedian, his job role changes, so it is quite funny to watch. Please do.
Lisa, I in particular like the bit where he says, you can't make words up, furlough, you can't make it up, that's not a word.
So just moving on to the changes for the claim itself when you are making the claims. You're unable to claim for any days in July until you do reach the 1st of July. The claims, as Sarah did explain, will be for the calendar month. So you can't overlap like we had done previously, which goes against the grain of what they are advising to try and put your claim through to align with your payroll period. So, for example, if we were to look at a weekly payroll with a pay period of the 29th of June to the 5th of July, ordinarily you may put a claim in for a 3-week period that would include those dates. You can't going forward, and you would have to split that up into 2 claims. So you would claim for the period 29th of June to the 30th of July, and then from the 1st of July to the 5th of July. And any claims that you have got outstanding that from up to the 30th of June do need submitting by the end of July. Claims going forward must be at least 7 days unless, like I've just used in that example, you are claiming for the first few days in the calendar month or the last few days in the month. So for that example, the 29th and the 30th, it may be that you tail it onto your last claim, or if you can't, you might have to do that as a claim in itself. There is a section now on the claim forms to say that you declared that you've overclaimed in a previous pay period or a previous claim, so you can make the adjustment on the current claim that you're in. As Sarah mentioned before, you can only claim for the total number of employees that you've had on a previous claim prior to July. And the exception would apply for maternity. We're yet to find out how we process that claim through. We have had a few claims with clients historically that we've needed to telephone the revenue to put them through over the telephone, as they've been rejected when you do the online claim. If I get any further information on that, we'll share with you in closer to time as well. So just to reiterate, the last date that an employee could have furloughed to be eligible for the new flexible furlough scheme is the 10th of June. Hopefully none of you missed that date and you have actually placed those employees on furlough now, if you should you wish to take advantage of the flexible furlough. As I said, HMRC have said to try and match your claim period to the pay period whenever possible. But like I've showed in that example above, a lot of the times it isn't. And it does make it more difficult if you have a weekly and a monthly payroll, for example. The monthly payroll frequency might run from the first to the end of the month. However, your weekly frequency will run outside of those dates. And you can still claim for up to 14 days prior to the claim end date. However, if you are using the flexible furlough, I'd probably recommend to process your claim at the same time as you're processing your payroll, just to ensure that you know those employees have worked the hours that you've planned and agreed before submitting the claim. I do see that going forward with the flexible furlough, there will be quite a few amends having to take place. Just wanted to cover off the deductions within the furlough pay. So I know there is a myth out there, but it is subject to normal deductions such as tax, national insurance, pensions and student loan. There is a temporary stop on attachment orders. And just to mention the salary exchange. So if you have anyone who has a pension, for example, that's taken as a salary exchange, the calculation that you use for your furlough pay is after the salary, after that deduction has been applied. So for example, if you have somebody earning £1,500 in a month, the pension sacrifice arrangement is perhaps £100, you would use the £1,400. They would actually receive 80% of that, which is £1,120. Any benefits that they do have in place prior to furlough, they should continue, and the employee shouldn't be any worse off for those. For example, childcare vouchers. Somebody has a maximum childcare voucher of £243. You would have to pay that as an addition and also a deduction, so that they contra off each other and the employee is no worse off for that and they're still receiving the furlough pay. If you do have anyone who has a sacrifice arrangement in place and they perhaps want to stop that arrangement at the moment, COVID is treated as a life event. Therefore, if they wanted to change any arrangements, they can do so. They would just need to contact the providers for which the salary exchange is in place for, such as pension providers. I thought while I was touching on benefits that I would mention, P11Ds that are due the 6th of July and the Class 1As payable by the 19th of July, the revenue haven't granted any extensions on those forms being submitted and the payment being made. So they are still due on those dates. So please, if you haven't already done so, provide your accountant with that information or ourselves. One point that has been raised with a number of clients recently, I think there was a myth out there that pay as you earn automatically had a 3-month deferment, as like the VAT that we had at the time. That wasn't the case. If you wanted to postpone your pay as you earn for cash flow purposes, you would have to contact HMRC and to make arrangement with them. Only at that point would you pay as per that agreement. Otherwise, it is due on the due dates of the 19th or the 22nd if you pay electronically of the month of each month. We have seen, I think it was last week, I received a phone call from HMRC, just reiterating that pay-as-you-earn periods do need to be due and payable. And I have recently seen letters in the last couple of days coming out to employees just advising of that, to make sure that if you are making a claim for your national employer's national insurance and your pension, that you should be paying those over to HMRC on time. So what to include within your claim? So it's the usual salary or the hours that they have worked, any overtime, any fees, commission that is contractual, and any allowances such as car allowance can be included in there. Things that shouldn't be included within the claim for the calculation, it's bonus payments that are non-contractual, commission payments, again, that are non-contractual, tips, and benefits in kind, such as a company car. It's just worth mentioning that those that are returning from statutory leave, you should calculate their pay based on what the usual salary was before they went on that leave period. Okay, right, I'm just going to share my screen. I hope this works. Just bear with me 1 second. Okay, can you see that, Sarah, okay?
Yes.
Yeah, perfect. Okay, so this is the scenario one for an employee that's based on fixed hour contract. So Stacey is contracted to 40 hours per week over 5 days. However, she's paid on a monthly basis. Stacey is being furloughed flexibly on the 6th of July, working 16 hours per week on a Monday and a Wednesday of each week. Her salary is £30,000. So I'm just going to talk you through the calculation stage for that. I've tried to break it down into four sections. I will just cover off the element of the furlough pay, but it's worth mentioning the calculation of your national insurance and the pension has changed slightly in that they have simplified it, if they could. So step one is the usual hours in the claim period. So how you'd calculate this, you'd take the contracted hours in the pay period. So in Stacey's case, it's 40 hours, times it by 52 and divide it by 12. So she works ordinarily 173.33 hours in a month. Divide that by the calendar days in the working pattern. So if we're using July for an example, we'll divide that by 31, remembering that you include non-working days in that calculation. Multiply this by the calendar days in the period that you're wishing to claim for. So again, taking the month of July, Stacey was off from the 6th of July, so that leaves us with 26 days remaining. So the calculation of that, it's 173.73 hours divided by 31, times it by 26 gives you 145.37. HMRC have requested we round this up so it will be 146 hours. Just to bear in mind, the contracted hours is that of the last pay ending on and before the 19th of March. So for your monthly paid, it'd be February salary, your February contracts. If an employee was on annual leave in that time, or they had sick hours, you can just treat them as though they've worked the ordinary contracted hours for that month. So step two is to calculate the hours that the employees actually worked. So for Stacey, that would be 64 hours. She works on a Monday and a Wednesday for eight hours per day, which is 8 days in the month of July. Step three, the hours that you're going to furlough her. So you would take the usual hours that we've calculated in step one, being 146, less the hours that we've worked, that she has worked, which we've calculated in step two, being 64 hours, which equals the hours that we're going to furlough her for, which is the 82 hours. Moving on to step four. So her salary is £30,000. So to calculate a full furlough pay, you take £30,000 divided by 12, divided by the number of days in the calendar month, which in this case is 31, times it by the number of days furloughed for the whole period, times that by 80%, gives you 1677.42. Then multiply this by the furloughed hours, which is 82, and then divide by the usual hours in the furlough period, which is 146. You then get to your furlough pay of £942.11. So like I said, that is to get to your furlough pay stage. You then need to consider what you can claim in terms of employer's NI and employer's pension. They have simplified that, and there is examples on HMRC website. I just didn't want to go into too much detail on that example. So I'm just going to flip to our next scenario. So scenario two is an employee. Can you see that, Sarah?
Yep.
Perfect. Scenario two is George. He's a regular worker, so he works variable hours. His number of hours worked in the year to 5th of April 20 was 1,250. The hours worked in July 2019 is 100. George was furloughed from the 1st of July, and he's worked 20 hours over the month of July. He'd been employed for the full year of 1920, however, was placed on furlough initially from the 23rd of March. There is a new ruling with the HMRC that from April 2019, where you should show the number of hours worked in the period on pay slips. Therefore, your payroll software should have a historical report in there to get the information that you need for an irregular worker calculation. So just to work through our example, you have two options with an irregular worker. Option one is to calculate it based on the annual hours that they've worked in 1920. So I'll use that option first. The second option is to look at the usual hours worked in that same period, but of the previous tax year. So for option one, the number of hours that worked in the 1920 tax year before the employee was furloughed was 1,250. To work out the usual hours in the claim period, we take that amount, divided by the calendar days the employee was employed for you back for the 1920 tax year. In George's case, he was paid for the whole year, employed for the whole year. However, he was furloughed at the 23rd of March. So we should take his dates from the 6th of April 19 to the 23rd of March 20, which is 352 days. Multiply by the calendar days in the pay period that we're claiming for, which would be 31, and rounded up to a whole number. So for George, we get 1250 divided by 352 days, times it by 31 days in the claim period, bringing us to 110.08, which would round to 111 hours. So that's using the option one. The second option would be to look at the hours worked in the period last year. So identify the period that corresponds. Now, we need to look to make sure that at least one of the calendar days crosses over from your period in your current tax year to the period that you're looking at in the previous year, and use the hours worked in that period. So if we're looking at George, for example, he'd worked 100 hours in July 19, so we'll take that. But because his average hours of the 1250 works out more beneficial for him, we would use that amount. So step two of the calculation, we'd look at the hours that he's worked. So George worked 20 hours over that month. Step three, the hours that are furloughed. So we take the usual hours, which is 111, we calculated in step one, less the hours that he's worked, which is 20. So we've claimed for 91 hours to be furloughed for him. We get to calculate the furlough pay for him. To keep it simple, we've kept the same salary of £30,000, divided by 12, because he's also paid monthly, divided by 31 days in July, times it by 31 days because he's been off for the whole of the month, times it by 80% gives us a 2,000. £1,000. Multiply that by his furloughed hours, which was 91, divided by usual hours in the furlough period to give you a furlough pay of 1639.64. There is some joy. There is an online calculator for HMRC that I presume many of you may have been using for your previous claims. However, it doesn't cover all scenarios, and you do have to complete it one employee at a time. We'd perhaps recommend setting up a spreadsheet to help with those calculations. It's just the initial setup of that spreadsheet in the first place that will take time. So that's it for the examples and the calculations. Just to move on to auditing. As Sarah mentioned before, we need to ensure that we're keeping records that align with the payroll, which is currently 5 years plus the current year. So what records should we keep? We need to make sure we're keeping the amount of the claim and the claim period for each employee, the claim reference number that you get when you submit the claim. Now, I know initially you couldn't save the claim itself and you had to go to save it onto your desktop as a PDF. I know when you log in now, you have got an area where you can save that claim online, but I'd still suggest to save it externally and keep it in one place with everything together. So your calculations, whether you use a spreadsheet or again, whether you use the online calculator, do a screenshot of that and keep everything as evidence. HMRC have said that they won't question what method you've used for the regular workers. So if you've used the 1920 earnings in total, or if you use the similar period of last year, however, you've just got to ensure that you've got that evidence to support your reason for using that method. The usual hours worked, you should record the actual hours worked. And as Sarah said, any communication letters that have been sent to staff placing them on furlough, that'd be the initial communication letter. And then more importantly, as the flexible furlough claim comes into place and you've got the hours that have been agreed between you both. It will take time for HMRC to be doing the compliance checks. However, they will be doing them in due course. We've only seen it recently with the letters coming through. I'm checking to make sure you've made your pays, your earned payments. So I can only see in the future that we will get compliance checks and they can go all the way back to the 6 years. Okay, I think that's the examples covered off and the audit requirements. I think we've got a few questions now that I'm going to ask Sarah. And then vice versa, Sarah can pick my brains and ask me a few questions as well.
Lisa, just before we start them, I have noticed that we've not got any questions in the question box. So if people do have questions, feel free to start putting them in now. But we'll obviously run through our Q&A session first.
Perfect. So can employees work whilst on flexible furlough leave?
This is probably an obvious question, but just to state the obvious, in flexible furlough, obviously employees will be both working and furloughed potentially in every given week. In the period of time that they are furloughed, they should not be carrying out any work whatsoever. Obviously, as with full furlough, they can carry out training as long as they receive the national minimum wage for that training, and as long as there's no financial benefit of that training to the organisation. So just to give an example, where you might be adopting a pattern under the flexible furlough scheme of an individual working 2 days and being furloughed for 3 days, they can't work during the 3 days that they are furloughed at all. And for purposes of audit, it's important really that you don't have any trail of emails that might be being answered or anything else in that period, because obviously that could constitute work, is likely to constitute work.
How is holiday accrued whilst on flexible furlough?
Again, it's exactly how it would accrue, whether they're on full furlough or otherwise, whether they are working. So it doesn't matter whether they're on full furlough or partially furloughed under the flexible furlough scheme. They will just accrue their holidays in the same way at their full rate of pay. So if an employee decides to take holiday and you agree to that as their employer whilst they're on flexible furlough, their holidays will have obviously accrued. And as I said earlier, you will be required to pay them and top them up to 100% of their contractual rate for those hours that they normally work.
Yeah, just to add on to that as well, that does affect your national insurance that you can claim back and the pension. So you should always include any salaries that ordinarily worked or any top-up pay. So if they are getting holiday top-up, that would affect your national insurance that you can claim back and also the pension contribution. Okay. Can I still have employees on full furlough?
Yes, absolutely. I've got, you know, a number of clients that have just got a large proportion of their workforce still on full furlough and are not anticipating using the flexible furlough scheme, or certainly not for now. And they can just continue on the full furlough scheme under the old regime. And obviously, as I mentioned earlier, there is a curtailing of that scheme from August, you know, September and October. And just to mention, as I didn't say it earlier, under the 80% furlough regime that we're currently on, the cap is at £2,500 gross per month for those on 80% of pay. From September, where employers are obliged to pay 10% of furlough pay, the cap then becomes £2,187.50. And again in October, where employers are required to contribute 20% of the furlough pay, the cap is 1,875. So those figures will be in the document that we subsequently supply. But yes, I just thought it was worth mentioning that for the purpose of this. But there's nothing to stop you keeping people on full furlough until October if that suits the needs of your business. But obviously the scheme will curtail, as I've outlined earlier.
Okay. Can I still furlough employees who have not previously been furloughed?
The answer to that is no. So what should have happened is that you should have furloughed any employee that you wanted to be able to adopt the flexible furlough scheme by the latest the 10th of June to give the three consecutive weeks in before the 30th of June. So can I still furlough employees who have not previously been furloughed? No. But as I mentioned earlier, there is an exception to that rule. Which is that anyone returning from family-related leave, so maternity, paternity, adoption, shared parental or parental bereavement leave, or where they are a reservist returning to work from having been called to serve the country, after the 10th of June, they are able to be within the furlough scheme, whether that's flexible or full.
Yeah.
So is that all of the questions you have for me?
Yeah.
Is there any more?
We've covered a couple of these points off, but I think it's worth just mentioning them again so we're clear.
Yes.
So is there a maximum number of employees that can be furloughed?
Yeah, so ultimately on that, it's the amount that you've previously furloughed, amount of employees you've previously furloughed in any other given month. So let's say for the month of April, you furloughed 50 employees. And for the month of May, you furloughed 40 employees, and you are only able to, going forward, under the flexible scheme, furlough 50, no more than 50, which was the maximum number in a previous month that you'd claimed. I hope I've made that clear. Sounded a bit gobbled to you.
Yeah, and I think on the claim itself, we'll only find out if we begin submitting claims, whether they've got some caveat on the claim to ask if it does exceed the maximum, if they've got anybody who's been on statutory leave,
yes.
Or whether we do have to do those over the telephone, time will tell. Those
yep.
that we had to do over the telephone historically for clients have been ones where they've had employees that have started actually on the 19th or have been so close with the 18th of March, and then the RTI has gone on that date. So it's perhaps that the revenue systems can't quite get there with the calculation side automated and seeing that they have been employed by that 19th. So that's what we've seen historically. And just the final one is, what records do I have to keep?
I think you were going to pick up that question, Lisa, because you dealt with it within the session. So, but ultimately, it is all of your documentation surrounding this for 5 years plus the current year. So from my perspective on the employment law side, it's absolutely all of your correspondence with employees from the start of furlough, your furlough agreements or letters if you've done it in letter format, and the changes that you're going to make under the flexible scheme. Any spreadsheet that you have, as you mentioned earlier, Lisa, with all of the figures and the way that you've calculated, any screenshots, or the actual claims themselves that you're making within the portal. So all of the documentation you will need to retain, as I said, for 5 years and the current year.
Excuse me, my Teams is telling me I can't write a question because I'm not part of the chat, so I can't actually raise a question, and I wonder if that's the same for everybody, which is why no questions have come in.
People have been able to write comments. Are people able to just put something in the chat box to prove they're able to type? So even if it's just test.
May I ask a question while I'm on?
Yes, of course, Vivian.
If somebody's furloughed, but they're not part of the job retention scheme because they hadn't been employed long enough at the start of it, is there anything that we need to know any different about them coming back to work part-time or otherwise?
Do you want to pick that up, Lisa, or do you want me to pick it up?
Yeah, no, that's fine. So you couldn't furlough them initially, Vivian, but they have been off work, have they?
Yes, sorry, they have.
Yeah. No, I don't think from a payroll point of view, there's nothing any different that you'd need to do. The returning to work on the hours that you've informed them, you just can't claim any of the furlough elements that.
Yeah.
And there's nothing from an HR point of view as to anything that we have to do different.
Well, you're just simply bringing them back to work off the furlough scheme. I think within a number of the letters we drafted for clients or agreements, it stated when you could bring individuals back from furlough leave. So presumably your letters did that to say at a time that we anticipate you're coming back, we'll give notice. So you're just giving notice for them to be able to return.
That's great. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And just to answer your question, Vivian, people seem to have been able to write things in the comments box. So I've noticed that Carrie has asked a question. Would it be possible to have a written copy of the step-by-step calculations that were described?
Yeah, that's fine. Carrie, I've replied on the chat, but we will circulate that afterwards as well in the follow-up email.
So, Lisa, should I go on to ask you some questions on the payroll side of things?
Yeah.
If we want to bring back employees for on-the-job training, do we have to bring them back onto flexible furlough and pay them 100% of the time that they're training, or can we leave them on full-time furlough?
So, for me, I think you can leave them on full-time furlough. The considerations that you need to look at is, are they doing on-the-job training, or is there anything in there that's generating income for the business? If there was, that's when you would look at bringing them back on flexible furlough. But if it is ultimately for training purposes only, they do encourage that training is still continued. So you could keep them on full furlough and just pay them for just cover the hours that they're on for training. So you just need to make sure that they're paid at least national minimum wage. If you're topping up to 100%, then you are likely to be paying them at that rate at least. But if you're paying only 80% and someone's on minimum wage, you need to top up the difference in the hourly rate.
Okay, thanks. Under flexible furlough, does the period of furlough need to be for 3 weeks or more?
No, as long as the employees previously had 3 consecutive weeks of furlough and qualified under the old rulings, then they can return on flexible furlough and the hours can be agreed on a weekly basis. And again, the claims can be done at a minimum of a week. You may choose to do the claims on a longer period. I know, for example, clients where we have the process weekly for cash flow purposes, they're quite sufficient so that they would put the claim in per page worm period. That will change slightly and they will do it for the calendar month going forward, but it will be longer than 1 week that we're claiming for.
Okay. My employee has childcare responsibilities. However, the business has returned to work. Can we still furlough this employee?
So yeah, if she's previously been on furlough, then she can remain on full furlough. It may be that she has childcare issues for only part of the week. So this would work great for flexible furloughing, would work great for both yourself and her. if you could get her back into the business for a few hours. But ultimately, she has childcare responsibilities. You want to be seen as an employer to doing the best for her. So yes, she can remain on furlough.
Yeah, and I think the same applies for those that are shielding with the letter from the NHS as well.
Yeah.
So my employee is currently furloughed, however, has telephoned to say that they're now sick. Can they remain on furlough or do I pay statutory sick pay?
So as an employee, you've got an option on what you'd like to do. They can remain on furlough or you can move them to statutory sick pay. If the employee remains on furlough, you can still claim the furlough grant. If you move them to sick pay, you would no longer be able to claim that grant. However, you may be able to, if it is COVID related, you may be able to claim up to the 14 days SSP ruling that the government introduced.
Great. So I've noticed that there are no other further questions within the... Oh, I think a question's just come in. let me see if I can see more. If you need to put in writing the changes to work pattern, if it changes week by week, or will an initial consultation letter that agrees to flex furlough be sufficient? I think this remains to be seen, and I think it depends on what you agree with your employee at the start. Ultimately, if it is going to change week by week, I think it's worth having an agreement or a letter that says that you will notify them on a week by week basis of what those changes will be, and they'll be agreed. But I think it will depend how you're anticipating that changing. So if the hours are going to be exactly the same, but the days might change, and the employee agrees to that all, with no issues when you consult with them initially, then that can all be recorded in a letter with maybe just some kind of update to cover you and to provide a record of how you're doing it going forward. So I think the short answer is that it may be sufficient for you to just do something initially if it's going to cover your arrangement, but I don't think there's any harm in agreeing something on a week by week basis if it's going to chop and change, just to absolutely cover your back and ensure that there are no issues on that front. Were you going to add something, Lisa?
Yeah, just probably follow up with that into just have a think about how you're going to make your claims. So for what period? So look at process your payroll now. Is it a monthly payroll or a weekly payroll? And then try and plan ahead to look at how your claims are going to look, how they fit in with your payroll processing. And then track along the way on where you see the hours to be worked for your employees. I think a bit of forward planning would really help.
Yeah. So as you said, you could almost do it on a monthly basis if you know when that ties in with your payroll, but obviously state in any communication that that will be subject to change, but you would notify them of any such change as and when the need arises.
Yeah.
So I think that covers all the questions in the chat box as far as I can see, and our session for today. Just a couple of final points, just to say that obviously whilst Lisa and I have focused today on the employment HR and payroll side of things, we both have some wonderful colleagues within our businesses that are able to advise on a whole raft of issues that will be arising as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, and for example, COVID grants, insolvency. We're seeing, as one might imagine, a lot of private client work in terms of wills and family work as well. So we have a range of expertise within both businesses. Do feel free to call upon us, and we can put you in touch with the right member of our team. I am going to put up a slide just as we conclude with both myself and Lisa's contact details. I'll alternate between the two. So if you do want to take down either of our details, you can. And obviously, if you want to contact us after today's session to go through at any points, then, please feel free to do so. We'd both welcome that. And in typical lawyer fashion, obviously, we haven't given any specific legal advice to yourselves. So if you are going to take any of the steps that we've discussed, then, on anything specific, do obtain that advice, for example, on the collective consultation point that I mentioned earlier, or if you're going to take some other steps that were covered in our last webinar, such as redundancy or reduction of hours and pay. two further things. Feedback, we welcome any feedback from yourselves, and I think we will send out a follow-up email with the document that we discussed, and also seeking some feedback from yourselves, and both Lisa and I would welcome that, because it does help us in terms of planning future sessions. So thank you for sending any feedback to us. And if you do want to sign up to both KBL and Pearce bulletins, or either of the bulletins, you can again respond to our follow-up email to let us know, and we'll put you on our mailing list. But otherwise, thank you very much to you all for joining us for today's webinar. Lisa, as always, it's been a pleasure. And if anyone does have any further questions they want to raise, you know, do get in touch. But thank you very much.